October 2nd, 1981, Signal Hill, California. Earl Beebe, interviewed by Kay Briegel.
Is it off wrong?
As I said, the first thing I'd like to ask you is where you were born.
I was born in a little town you might not have ever heard of. It's a little town called Eaton, Indiana. That's in southern Indiana. And I've never been back there since I was a baby, just a short one come out.
What did your father do?
My father was an agriculturist. He was in many, many things. He ran a sawmill. He was the head of a paving outfit. And he was, I wouldn't want to say a dreamer. He had a glass factory here in Signal Hill at one time, and at that time it was the only glass bead manufacturing company in the United States. In those early days, the women used to have their little powwow beads on their dresses and on their hats, and there was a thing that you don't see anymore called portieres that would be something that would be hanging in a doorway. There would be the eucalyptus bulbs, and in between each of the eucalyptus bulbs would be maybe a half-inch glass tube bead. And that was very popular in the early days. He made something that for a while was very popular. It was called humidifiers, and it was the things made out of glass that was attached to the automobile. And it would have the car, it was filled with liquid, and it would make the car run like in the foggy days and things, how much better it would run. The man by the name of Gunther was the one that invented it. And there's a little street, I don't know whether you're aware of it or not, off of Pacific called Gunther Way. Well, this was a man that at that time that comes out of my father. He made water tubes, the glass water tubes, and he made the things that the dentists use for that mirrors that they put when they reach into your mouth with a little mirror, and he made those, a lot of those things, and he was quite a man.
What was the name of it? Was it called the Beebe Glass Factory, or what?
No, it was, oddly enough, I think it was, I don't know what it was called that or what it was called now. This goes back in about 1920 and 21. When he had it over here on Signal Hill. It was, and then later on, after he started those, then he did have a BB glass company, and this is where the Memorial Hospital is now. At that time, there was a frog pond, a big one, and we youngsters used to get down there and fish. They had a lot of the coolies and the carp fish, and we made our own rafts and little canoes, and it was, so I was told in the early days it was a place that was used to water the sheep when they come in. And then I was gone when they filled that, so I don't know how they ever put that much dirt in there. And as you well know, and today with the way things are, they would have never let them do away with something of that nature. It was down in the pocket of the hills there. And it was just about a block west of Atlantic, and about two blocks north of Willow Street. And it was called, or I should say Springfield, instead of Willow. And it was a very good place for a lot of the youngsters to hang around down there. And our lot on our home, at the tail end of it, was almost down into that. And my father had a glass factory at that time making these glass beads. And then whenever I was going to school, we made our own Christmas ornaments that you see hanging on trees, and our marbles, and a lot of the things that was very well there. So then we went into a lot of other things after that.
Why did your father decide to come to Long Beach, or Signal Hill?
He never did tell me. And I don't suppose I ever wondered why, because we went when we were just, I was just a baby, and we went down to Arkansas and were there for about 6 years. And oddly enough, I never thought about asking why did he come out here. We had no people here, and they just come on out here and, on a train, and they came out here in 1912 and moved up here in the Signal Hill area about 1917.
Where did it come first then? Where did you live in 1912?
We lived all over Long Beach. I think about the first that I can remember was on the 1100 block on Olive Avenue. And we went to the old Alameda Avenue school. It's called Lincoln, I believe, now. But in those days, most all the schools were named after the street that they were on. It's easier to identify them.
Was your father in the glass business then?
No. He had worked in many things, as I said, working for paving contractors and the various other things. He was almost like I was, except he was much smarter. But in many, many things, I don't think he ever did know really what he wanted. He was a man of the soil, mostly. But he went into the Cahaxes and the sawmill and later on and put that into down now where the ladies' institution is up there. And he, before then, when he had the sawmill up there, and previous to that, he had a sawmill up in the San Bernardino Mountains, so Lake Arrowhead up in that area there. So it gave a lot for us. It was growing up. We followed the fruit too in those days. Many of the things that the young people, of course, if you remember, along about that time, it was kind of tough from everybody. That's where the word Okie came in, and a lot of other things. And I didn't realize until I became an adult that I lived in a ghetto. Because we were all poor and we all had a lot of fun, we thought nothing about where we were. We were with the blacks or yellows or whatever. So we just grew up together, and sometimes our mother didn't know which one of the houses we were in. And so when we followed the fruit, we got, if I remember right, from 5 to 10 cents a lug box to pick apricots and things. And we would get up early, and of course we had a camp right out in the orchard. In those days we did that. They didn't have the place, the facilities that they do now. And we would pick a certain amount before the heat came on, and then we would, later on, we would go down to the plunge or something and come back the next time, try to pick about maybe 30 or 40 boxes. This was before my teenage years, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, where did you pick fruit? Was it right around here?
No, it was up in the Hammer Valley and up and through there. The town of Paris and Hammer, San Jacinto, and through there. And at one time, there was fruit to be picked here. That was the guavas and some of the things right here on Signal Hill. So when we were youngsters, there was some of the ways we had money for spending money.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, there were six of us, three boys and three girls, and I was the eldest. And I was the only one that didn't get married. So I didn't find out go on very well.
Tell about, you picked things that grew on Signal Hill
mm-hmm.
when you were a kid. Tell about some of the things that you picked up here.
Well, it mostly was the guavas and such as that. In those days, Signal Hill was a very famous place for what was called a tip-top cantaloupe. And tip-top watermelons. And it was all done by dry farming, mostly by dry farming, and all by Japanese. And the very few people ever come out here because there was no transportation. And it was only the poor people that were around in this area here. And it was a very, very wonderful thing before oil came in. It was a very peaceful place, and it was something that we look back into many, many years ago when our country was formed, of how they get together and do these things.
Is this after you lived by the Frog Pond, or when you still lived in Long Beach?
Well, the Frog Pond was in Long Beach, as you know. The Frog Pond, I think 27th Street now was called, in those days, was called Arabella Street. So if you look at some of the old street names, you'll find the word Arabella.
Yeah, but did you pick fruit when you lived, like on Elm?
No, when I was living
here.
I moved up here in 1917.
Yeah.
And that's where, when I was up in here in those days, that's when I would pick the fruit.
And did you pick cantaloupes and watermelons?
No, I never got into that. I guess because it's too heavy. My father used to want me to help him in the glass factory a bit, and I wasn't old enough, and I was going to Burnett School. Of course, Burnett in those days is not like the Burnett now. And as you well know, in the early days, there was no such thing as the junior high schools. We would go up from the first to the eighth grade, And then we went right into the high school. And the only high school that was in the area was Lomas Poly. Then Wilson came in later, but then that was the first one.
Yeah. Somebody told me that there was like a township around Burnett. And it was like a little settlement.
You mean the town of Burnett? I mean the street of Burnett Street?
No, around like Hill and Atlantic where the school is.
Well, there was a little settlement here on, as you know, there's a train used to come down California Street.
Yeah.
And on Willow and California, there was a bridge that the smokestack from the locomotive would barely clear that. And that's where Buck Jones and many of the old movie stars used to gallop up on the bridge and they drop down on there. And then the studios was the Balboa Studios down on 6th and the California. There was a little settlement on the corner of Burnett and California. That's where the mail used to come in here.
Was there a post office?
Yes, Wilson's store was there, and that's where they got their mail and things. And in down in around the Burnett School, there wasn't that kind of a settlement. It was different than it is now, but it was because there wasn't much buses or anything else there. And then, of course, on across from Long Beach Boulevard, clear over to the river was nothing but willow trees. And that's where the name of Willowville was originated from. There was a little station there that was on Willow and Long Beach Boulevard. And this was called Willowville. And then later on we moved just across the street from there. That was where I grew up in my earlier years there. So I've been moving right around here most all the time.
So the Japanese mostly were the people who did agriculture on Sacred
Yes,
Hill. Did you know about the Japanese Association and where they had their school?
Well, in those days, the Japanese had their little farmhouses, and they had the Japanese wagons would come along with their merchandise on it just to the Japanese settlement. And as I said before, because of the transportation up here, it was so difficult to get to that it was very hard to for anybody unless they just would be up in this kind of a place there because they couldn't find a better place. It was nice. I look back on it now and I think not because I was young then, but it was the best time, I believe, in my life to see how America was formed to begin with. The movement west and the things they had to go through. But here was, we could stay out all night. That is, if it was hot in the summertime, we could lay out in the front yard or something. Nobody bothered. We had one policeman that rode a horse out in this area, and everybody thought a lot of him. And all the mothers had to do with any of the youngsters that if they didn't behave themselves, they'd tell Mr. Loper, that was one of the policemen's names. And it was scared to death, but now it doesn't mean anything. It was then, it was very good. And then, of course, being over and being with the Japanese and the very ones like this, that we had a better understanding of things. So when we were going to school, it was a very nice relationship.
Do you remember violence being grown on Signal Hill?
No, I don't. There was a lot of things up on Signal Hill. One of the main things that I remember was a tremendous amount of cactus plants.
Cactus plants?
Yeah.
Wild ones?
Yes, and so we used to come up here and we would get those apples off of the yard and eat those. And if you've ever been around any of them, you think you have all of the thorns off of it, then you don't, and get them in the mouth there and get them in the tongue, and then you have problems. And then I was with Earl Doherty's before I went in, when I got into later years, I went into the Army. Not that I was in 1925 when I went into the Army. And before then, I was with Earl Doherty, and that's what the field out here is named after, you know,
yeah.
The Doherty Field. And he had, originally, was up on Bigsby Road and Long Beach Boulevard. And then he moved from there down to Willow and Long Beach Boulevard. And incidentally, his widow is still down there running this place there. So I thought that when I went in the Army that I would go into the Air Corps, because he was very young in those days. And he wrote me a letter of introduction to give to the colonel that was over in the field there in Manila, because that's why I wanted to go to the Philippines. Earl Doherty was an instructor in Kelly Field during the war. I believe it was one of the big fields in Texas there during the First World War.
Yeah.
And he had an international license of about 87. It was way back. So when I got into San Francisco, because there was no way to get over there, the airport at that time was pretty well filled, and so they told us to get over there any way we could on any of the services, and then they could transfer when they got there. So I went over in the Coast Artillery, and when I got into San Francisco, that colonel that I was supposed to get a letter to was on his way back, so the letter wouldn't have done any good. And so then I stayed on there, and I went into the on Corregidor, and I was on there for the 2 years.
Did you fly with Earl Doherty?
I never had a license. I never was a as you call it, that. The only thing that I would do in those days would be that I helped pull the airplanes out on the line there so that the people could go for a joyride. I knew one of the very best stuffed flyers of all was Augie Pedler. Augie was one that got lost with Mr. Man on the pineapple flight to Hawaiian Island some time ago. And that was after I was in the Philippines. And then, of course, that's when Earl Doherty got killed. It was only about 1926 or 27. But history in those days, I remember that they would say that a biplane would be the only kind of an airplane that could fly. That if a monoplane would ever get into a tailspin, they'd never come out of it. So in the early days, they were flying and trying every way. It was more in the old expression that they were flying by the seat of their pants. None of them had phones, and the tail skid, there's no brakes on any of the car of the plane. And I'm very thankful that I lived in that era, because I've seen so much that has happened. And Signal Hill, getting back to Signal Hill, I've always had a feeling for this town for many reasons. First of all, of course, what made it famous was striking the war in 1924. But we would look up every morning and we would see the oil derricks being built from the top of the hill, from the shell well, number one. And it was right on a line right down to our place. And we were leased for oil at one time. But all of a sudden, about a block and a half or 2 blocks away from us, it made a veer and headed north. And then it went all over into the Cerritos area there. So all my school friends that were in that area made a lot of money. The D'Angelo's, and they had a chicken farm there, and Harvey had a chicken place there. So everything was changed then. You know, it was an uproaring town, and it changed all the laziness that we used to have. And looking back on it, because many years later when I came back, and I did work up on the field here for the Plymouth Oil Company as a roughneck, that I doubt whether the field has ever been completed, because in those days the boilers were set out in a field, and they put a few bricks underneath the thing, and we that had no license or anything, all we had to do was go out and watch if there was enough water in the glass. The old Bulldog Mack trucks was the one that did most of the work around, because anybody could drive them, but they were not a touchy thing like the Packard and the Thursday and a lot of the others. And it was quite a thing to be able to go through and to see what the businessman has to go through today in comparison to what he had to then. The paperwork and many, many other things that went on. And yet in all those things, there was a very, very seldom that we ever could see that there was an accident. I suppose the reason that the companies realized that they had somebody working for them, that they would take a little more precaution, because they didn't want the fact that he was out of the job, was not there, then it would cost them there. And not that I'm against regulations, I think we should have those, but I think that in today's living that we have far, far too much of it.
Let me ask you something about the frog pond. Was it just like a lake, or where did the water come from?
Well, it was a spring that was in there. And it was the hills. Maybe I could from Columbia. Columbia, you know, with Columbia Street is there. Well, just maybe a half a block or a block, well, maybe not that much, from Columbia South and from what was then Arabella, about a half a block north, and from Atlantic Avenue, about a block west, and then probably Lime Avenue, a little bit east, was a rolling hill. And this was down in a little, you might call it, pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fairly good-sized place there, and the water was still, of course, and it was not that we didn't drink it, and then when we fell overboard or something, but outside of that. And there was a lot of toolies, and it was just a real, real nice place there, and we that it could have been kept on kind of historical thing of in the olden days for that.
Okay, you said that there was agriculture on top of the hill. But where were the chicken farms? You said there were chicken farms.
Well, the D'Angelo's had theirs on just off of California, and I think it's what we might call Peterson. It was about three blocks north of the chicken farms. Was not on Signal Hill.
Oh, okay.
No, they were. There were two of them. One of them was on just off of California, and about what we would say maybe about 29th, maybe. And that was the D'Angelo's had that. And then there was the other one on the old Bacon property that was on about maybe a half a block or so off of California. And it was probably, maybe two blocks south of the D'Angelo's. And that's when my father had his first glass factory. There was a group of people got together and they formed that. The area has... there was an old school over on Cherry called the Cassaboon School, and I have not run across that anywhere in any of the literature. I don't know why. It's one of the oldest ones around here.
Yeah, it's in some literature.
Oh, you have seen that thing.
Yeah.
It was a Cassaboon School.
Hearing you call something the old Bacon property brings to mind the question, the Japanese couldn't own land. Who owned the land that they farmed?
Well, the Bacons didn't own them. The Japanese didn't own any of the property.
Right.
Yeah, they were not in that area at all. The only place that they were was up on what we now call Signal Hill.
But who owned the land that they farmed?
It could be, I don't know who owned most of them. The old companies used to be in there. Probably, I don't know whether the Montana Land Company had any up there or not. But it was all privately owned. And then when oil was discovered, the developers came in, and they went east then. And they would sell even as much as a foot square to somebody so they could say that they had a... And that's why at Signal Hill, we find such a regular-sized lots and 25-foot lots, because it was all in acres in those days.
Yeah, weren't there some big homes on top of the hill?
The only ones that I know is a personal friend of mine, is Joe Denny. He had the main one up on there.
Yeah.
And then later on, he moved the carriage house that he had across the street, and then that was called the Hilltop Cafe.
Yeah, because it seems to me that I read someplace that the top of the hill was subdivided before 1921.
I don't recall of anything up there when I was youngster growing up, but of anything being, I know they tried to sell it many, many times. Somewhere along the line, I don't know if you ever got one of those pamphlets that Joe Denny has of the early days. Did you get one of those? If you didn't, I'll get you one.
Which one do you mean?
Well, it's a...
By Chance, or then, which is the thing that the city of Signal Hill put out.
Well, no.
Mr. Miller gave me a copy of a prospectus that I think perhaps was put out by Denny of when he was trying to sell lots.
Yeah, that's the one I was referring to, one that they were going to have a streetcar line up there in the back end and all those things. Yeah, that gives a pretty much of a history on the thing. And he's a very, very fine gentleman. I've known him probably 45 years. He's a real nice person. You went over and did this with him, didn't you?
No, it was somebody from the junior league.
Oh, was it? Oh, yes, I remember. I know somebody did.
Yeah.
He's a very down-to-earth man, and he still does his own appraising for properties and everything else. He's quite a person. And the difference is that when he goes out to a piece of property and he does the appraising, that's what he'll pay. Or that maybe from a bank or from somebody else, they make it the value of the thing, but they don't give you the money for it. But he does. He says that's what he'll give. That's what he'll do. He's quite a person.
So, before, I guess I want to get it straight, a picture in my mind of what it was like before oil was discovered. So there was agriculture on top of the hill,
mm-hmm.
and the frog pond, and basically around about there were small agricultural plots and chicken farms and...
Yes, the bus line, there was a bus line from down on Atlantic Avenue that came down to the car track, that, you know, where the car went mm-hmm. across there. And then there was a local streetcar line that came from down Long Beach Boulevard to Willow Street,
mm-hmm.
Willowville. And then there was the one that cut across, went from Willow Street over to East Long Beach and around down to Long Beach. Long Beach. And so we were pretty well, because of the fact that no one had enough money to buy automobiles, there wasn't that many signs around anyway. And I remember the first car that I ever drove was about one of the really early Dodgers. I don't know what it was now, but then really there. And so we walked wherever we went.
And there was nothing essentially north of here until you got to Compton, because Dooley's wasn't there.
Oh, no, Dooley's wasn't there. On the corner of, I think it's a lot of... San Antonio Drive and Long Beach Boulevard was in the county, and they had a county strip building there where it's kind of like a country farms and things. And then just over the hills, just a short distance from there, was Mountain View Dairy. And had all their stuff and things in there. It was all open field in those days there. And the dairy was on, I think the store was on the corner of Long Beach Boulevard, about, I think where Sears and Roebuck building is now. And then across the street from that was the big car barns where the, all the local, where the electric trains were parked. It was a rural outfit, that's what it was. Very, very nice to I enjoyed it very much. And we never thought anything about it. Of course, in those days we didn't very well know. There was no TV, radio, or anything. And so there had to be a little bit of harmony with everybody. And then, of course, early when it got dark, there was nothing else to do. We all went to bed. But there was no problems on Halloween night or anything else like that. No crime happened around or anything else at all.
Where did you buy your clothes and things that you bought? Did you buy them all downtown?
But there was no other places to go. We had to go downtown and do whatever we could there.
Tell me about... Do you remember when the dry oil well was drilled?
Yes, but that was done out in not in on Signal Hill. This was done up on I don't know whether it's as far north as Bigby Knoll or not. It might not have been that far north, but I remember very well, and it was a dry hole. If that's the one you're referring to,
yeah.
It's the only one that I know of, because I don't think. That happened. And then, of course, when shells were drilled this thing here, then, my gosh, it was a kind of a boom town here. Everything was going.
Did you see the first well being drilled?
Yes, And I used to get up and watch on how that the old standard rig instead of the rotary. How
they had a cable tool rig?
Yes, when they first started, sure.
Okay, because I've never seen any pictures of cable tool rigs.
Oh, you haven't,
On Signal Hill.
Well, the early part there, I don't know what company's had it right now, because this is the very beginning, you see, that this did happen. It wasn't very long before they had the rotary that came in. And that's the only one I ever worked on was the rotary. And then there was a lot of small companies there. The one I worked for, I don't know if you've ever even heard of it anymore, but the Atlantic. I mean, not the Atlantic, but the, I mentioned a minute ago.
Plymouth,
yeah. Plymouth Oil Company, yeah. And he had several rigs around that, around the Signal Hill.
But they were all rotary.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of other places where they had cable tool rigs, mm-hmm. but I've never seen that. Well, you know, the dairies were different.
Yeah. Well, of course, my first job in there was installing the crown box in the derrick. And then from then on, I finally got on into the other parts of the, on the floor. And then I was up in the, what they call the derrick man. I did that for a while.
Okay. After the first well was drilled by the Shell Oil Company, what happened after that, after they found out that there was actually oil?
Oh, my goodness. They had to me what we all call, used to call them leech hounds, if you heard that expression. And they were from everywhere coming in here, and they were offering all kinds of indecent, and it just happened almost overnight. And again, what they were doing could not be done now. Of course, they didn't have that kind of lumber, they would be completely out of line. But, how that they would do what they call slant drilling, you know, if they didn't have a leech in one place, so they would go down and go underneath somebody else over there. And we used to have a hard time on being able to cement the wells in a lot of times. If it was heat or whatever, I never got into the technical part of that. But it was a lot of fun in a lot of ways. Of course, there was around the clock working. We had the frog pond at a restaurant over there, and the Green Onion had one. And all around in little places, they had these things going all night. And to thinking about the kind of money that they received in those days in comparison to what we have now. And many times, if they were on a derrick, there would be nothing to be on 6 or 7 months on one. And now, and especially if they would get into where they leave a tour or something, they might be fishing for a long time. But now, with all of the modern things they have, it has done that away.
Can you remember the first job you had working for an oil company?
It was the only one, the first and only one I ever had was with a Plymouth Oil Company. And as I said, the first job I ever had was helping to install the crown box.
Who ran the Plymouth Oil Company? Were they local people, or did they come from someplace else?
No, they were, as far as I know, I never got so far into it. The tool pusher, how I happened, because I just came out of the Army, 1927, and he happened to be our next-door neighbor, and I was looking for work, and so because he was a tool pusher, Red Mitchell was his name, and he got the job, and that's what they were doing, because they were just at that time spreading out a lot. They were in Las Vegas and over in Alameda and different places there. And we had, I don't know how many wells they did, 8 or 10, something of that nature.
Then Signal Hill was already pretty much, there were quite a few wells before you started
working. Yes. Because, as I said, I was here whenever it started, 1924. But then I went in the Army in 1925. And I was in the Army 25, 26, and 27. And so, when all the things were going on then, after 25, I was not here.
Yeah, so you worked for your father in the glass factory.
Well, I was only a kid, you can call it working, but...
As opposed to
Guavas. Well, yeah, I was going to grammar school in the eighth grade down here. I graduated from the eighth grade down here, the long way down here.
From Burnett?
Yeah.
And then went to college?
I was there a short time, and of course, after that I went in the Army. Yeah, a lot of historical things. That's why when I was down there looking at the films and things, I don't have a picture of it, but I wish that there would be more of a pinpoint about this peach pond down there. It was a really, really nice place to be, I think, so the youngsters could have so much fun down there. I don't know whether they let them do it now, they say they get drowned or something. I know that there was a place, something similar to that, only it was not down in a pocket of the hills, over on Main Street in... I don't know what that's called. That's not... oh, my gosh.
It's like in Rosecrans or Aspen?
No, it's right straight west, near Torrance, not that far over, but on Main Street there. And there was a lot of water in there and a lot of other things there. And so the county, because there was a couple of children got drowned in there, so they made them fill it in and take care of it and get away with it. You know, they wouldn't let them do this now, because it would be, they need that kind of thing. And it's always been a wonder to me on how they could ever get that kind of soil to fill in that. That's a huge undertaking, to put the hospital on it.
Yeah.
How they ever did the tamping and all of the things they had to do to make the ground like that. And this, as I said, it was after I went in the service that this all happened. 1925, and so I don't know how they did it. Even the freeways were not in going at that length of time, so wherever they got the dirt, I don't know, the soil that they put in there.
so you came back from the Army and you worked for an oil company, the Philips oil company.
Short time.
And you installed Crown Block?
Yeah, for a short time.
And then you were a roughneck?
Yeah, in the same company. I didn't do that very long because I went up to the Sequoia to build a highway there through the Sequoia National Park. I've been one that never really knew what I wanted. It's something that I wanted to do a lot of things. I wanted to be able to be with a lot of different people. I felt that even in the young days like that, because I was very small, I couldn't do the football and basketball and things. I wanted to be to where I could meet with various people. And I've always felt that the mind has to be just as active as your arms, your legs, or whatever. And by getting into many, many different kinds of work, for instance, I worked for the Central Detective Agency one year out at the racetrack out at Santa Anita. I worked as, on the Sacramento River in dredging. And there's so many things that I've done that I wouldn't trade places for anybody because of the fact that it's given me something that I would never have been able to have gotten otherwise. Like, I was here with the Chamber. I've been here now about 23 years. And I could get...
Signal Hill was incorporated before you went into the Army.
Yes,
Were you too young to be aware that that was going on?
Yes. Yeah, I was too... about 19 years old when I went in.
And so you weren't concerned about why they incorporated it?
No, except that I found out why that they did. If you look at the map from Signal Hill, you'll see that they don't go clear to the curb line of the street. They stay 80 feet back.
Really? How come?
Well, the reason that if they had gone to the curb line, they would have had to take care of half the street. And this way they don't. So that's why on Atlantic Avenue, the city limits is not clear to Atlantic Avenue. They're 80 feet to the east of it. And it's kind of a, if you look on the map, there's kind of a odd-shaped city that it'll go part of the way down Willow Street and on on the south curb of Willow Street is not any Signal Hill. 80 feet back it is. In other words, when somebody wants to build something, they have to go down to Long Beach to get the driveway right away put in, and the curb continues to break down, and then they have to come down to Signal Hill to get the rest of it. And then Philly Oak Cafe, even in their property, in the front end of it, there's where the bar and other things are, and then the dining room, there's a sign on the door that says you're not entering Signal Hill. And it's a zigzag kind of a city, if you've noticed the problem with it.
Yeah, it reads out the cemetery.
Yes, the cemetery is in Long Beach. And so all the cash registers and everything else was in the city of Signal Hill, of Long Beach, and the other parts, like the hospital that was the new building that went in down there, across the creek there, you know, the medical facility there. All the parking and everything was in Signal Hill, and the money part was in Long Beach. So they had to work that thing out, of course. There's a lot of oddities about the hill, but it's really a wonderful thing. I think that... people are lucky living here. It sounds kind of strange with all the things that happen, but there's very few times that you can get into a town that cannot be expanded because it's only 2.25 miles across, and we're almost in the center of Long Beach. It's not the only one because the Vatican and Rome are this way, and so is the city of industry and commerce. But in this kind of a way that the people get a chance to see who they're voting for. It's not on the TV or something. They can get out and they can see them. It's nice that they see when any of the city workers go by in their truck or anything, that they wave if you happen to get a chance to get acquainted with them. It's, again, repeating back to what I said at the beginning, that this is where our country was formed, where the people knew each other. It's changing now, where, of course, these are very expensive, the condominiums, and with that, there's a lot of problems coming in. But the only way they can build is up. They cannot expand. And then we get the problems of somebody's building so they can't see. And there's so many things that we didn't have to worry about in those days.
Getting back to your life, you said when you went to build roads through the mountains.
Well, yeah, that was from the big the Sherman the General Sherman tree in Sequoia. We went up there in Sequoia. Yes, we worked up there. It was about I don't know how many miles of working was there, but I worked. I drove a truck on there and working with the steam shovels and doing that.
And then what did you do after that?
Oh my God, some of you. Probably is along about those days. I don't know. I might have been out at the Santa Anita racetrack. When it was fun, they used the police in the various towns around there on their off days. Then something happened. I don't know what it was. And so they brought in the Pinkerton Detective Agency. And I knew someone that I had met that was during my... I'm very heavily involved in sports. And then I judged in the Pan American Games in Mexico City and the Central American Games. So anyway, in the early days, I got acquainted with those that could do something, and I was looking for a job, and they sent me out there in the uniform as a Pinkerton detective. And I only had two jobs out there. One of them was that I had to see to it that the autograph hounds didn't pester the movie stars too much. Robert Taylor and all the old movie stars were out there. And then from there, they took me back, and I was out at the paddock there where they didn't bother the horses. And then from there, I went up to try to see that those that worked for the track could not bet. So it was an interesting thing to know how a plant is. They're a regular city of their own when they have a huge jail facilities down on the thing there, and it's pretty well protected. Very seldom there's anything happen outside of the cows that are out there. And so I was only there the one season, but it was a very interesting thing. And of course, I worked in the sawmills up in the Tehachapi Mountains.
Was it during the Depression, or?
Well, during the Depression, latter part of the Depression, I was in the service there, early part of the year, 1925, 26, and 27 is when we had the real bad. And then they went into the 30s there. You see, we still had a lot of it in the 30s there. So we did whatever we could. I worked in the shipyards out here, and from there, that qualified me. I learned to be a shipfitter, and then I went up from there on Navy Yard, and I was up there for 5 years on that. So it gave me a...
So you came back to Long Beach or Signal Hill and worked in the shipyard?
This has always been my home here. My parents have lived here, and this is wherever I would go, I would always come back down here. It was always... And now, since being never married, I've kind of adopted the town. It's like my family. And, I see it when it's happy, and I see it when it's bad. Not, and I see so many things that's happening. But then I think any family has the same problems there. And so it had growing pains, and it had just about every kind of a thing that could happen to a city. But still, when you get into a foreign country, I remember one time in the Pan American Games, I was in the hotel. I'd lived about a 3 or 4 weeks at that time in Mexico City. And after the games were over, and I was flipping a quarter in my hand. And all of a sudden, I got the strangest feeling that I wanted to be where I could spend that quarter. Now, I could spend it anywhere in Mexico, they would have taken it. But it was just kind of a hunger almost. And so I knew some of the people that could get it right that day, and I'd come right back and come right back here. In other words, we talk about one town or another. We talk about the trials and tribulations that come right down to it. Educationally wise, politically wise, or whatever you go, it's still a part of the whole. And that's just why that I feel that if people would look at their own backyard, then we wouldn't have to worry about all these things. But what we do, we always are looking. I remember a case of when they were having a lot of problems with the airport out here. And those that were running for office were saying that they should not be in the flying over the houses and all these. So I was in one of the radio stations one time, and they were interviewing a couple, three of them. So I asked this one lady, did she ever take a vacation? And she said, yes. And I said, I suppose you drive. She said, no, she flies. And I said, well, then I would feel a lot more respect for you if you did not fly, because you're going over somebody else's house that you don't want them to be with you. And so that's what I talk about our city here. Sure, we have a lot of problems. But we're looking too far maybe the Washington and Sacramento for the blame of everything that's happening. And I think if we look at our own place here and look at it in that sense, then that's all that's necessary. Of course, the government has so much of the paperwork and so much of the mandates and many other things, but we have to think that no matter how far they get up there, that they had to start from someplace. And that's why they did what, and when we put somebody in office, we're getting complacent about it.